Committee on State Government, Innovation, and Veterans will be in order. Today is Wednesday, April 13th, 2011, and we're going to get underway with our first item, and I'll probably butt in Senator Koch when we have a quorum so I can put it on the record. But we're going to start with the first item on the agenda, which is Senate File Number 51. Welcome, Senator Koch.
Oh, thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and thank you for having me here today. Senate File 51 is a veteran's license plate, but with a bit of a twist. It's calling for the ability to have a female veteran designation on license plates. And I have two testifiers here today who will speak to this. I have Lieutenant Colonel Barb O'Reilly, who is Director of Women Veterans for the Department of Veterans Affairs, and Trista Mattis-Castillo, who is the chair of the Women's Veterans Initiatives. And so we'll start with Ms. Mattis-Castillo.
Excellent. Thank you, Chair, for having us here today and taking our bill.
Let me remind you to please sign that sign-in sheet there, and then would you say your own name for the record?
I will. I am Trista Mattis-Castillo, and as Senator Koch said, I am the chair of the Women Veterans Initiative. We have 23,000 women veterans in the state of Minnesota from World War II to the current operations, and one of the biggest issues about women veterans and that it actually is a barrier for women veterans in seeking services is being recognized as veterans. And as you can tell, both Lieutenant Colonel O'Reilly and I are veterans, but we probably don't look like what people expect veterans to look like. But we are, and we're very real. I've served 16 years on active duty in three different branches of the service, so I can definitely claim the veteran status. And one of the biggest barriers is that women veterans often get told, you don't look like a veteran, or if they are seeking services at the VA or other places, someone will ask them who's their sponsor. Which is very frustrating, as you can imagine, when it is indeed ourselves. We've asked women veterans what is a way that would represent them and just to educate the general public and honor their service, and this women's veterans license plate would do that. When you see a veteran's plate on a vehicle now, people always assume it's the gentleman driving or the gentleman who must own the car. But in fact, it could very much be us. My husband is also a veteran, and we have opted not to have veteran's plate yet because he knows that he would only get thanked and that my service wouldn't be honored because it's an assumption of the general public. He has agreed to have the woman veteran's plate, though, once we've carried this bill, because he's pretty sure nobody will question him as an Army Ranger. So that's really the purpose of this bill, is to elevate the status of women veterans, make people aware of the general public, and honor their service as well.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions for this testifier? Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, I want to thank you for serving.
Thank you.
But do you have any idea how many women would like a plate like this? Is there any estimates at all?
So I've been working with the Department of Transportation on this issue, and again, it's a guess. But I can tell you we started this early in session and have had some media attention, and there's been articles in the Star Tribune. And my email and phone has been ringing off the hook since that started a month ago with our article. I literally get something in the mail or an email with someone giving us a design, other women veterans. We've had an enormous amount of World War II women that have come out and said, now I can say I'm a veteran too, and that it would honor us. So, it's a guess. I would say probably close to 1,000.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Chair.
Senator Wigger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just texted my daughter, who's an Iraq vet, and she said she would like one.
Awesome. Thank you, Senator Wigger.
All right. Next testifier.
Yes, I'm Barb O'Reilly. I'm the Director of Women, Veterans, and Employment Initiatives with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And just from the department's standpoint, this is a relatively low-cost initiative, and the department certainly supports women veterans. And, just to add, I think that this license plate really gives an opportunity for the women veterans to feel proud of their service. So I'll add that personal note as my support for this bill as well.
All right. Any questions for our testifiers? Thank you very much. Are there any other testifiers, either for or against this bill? Please come forward and state your name.
Oops. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ralph Donay. I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council of Minnesota. We're an organization of 33 veterans organizations that come together to help promote veterans issues in the state of Minnesota, and we wholeheartedly endorse this initiative. We think it's long overdue. The VA and many of the other veteran organizations around the United States have finally realized the fact that we need to honor those women that have served us. I was a Vietnam veteran, and I was taken care of by nurses and stuff after I was injured in Vietnam, and without them, I don't know what I would have done. So I want to thank you for your time, and we hope that this just flies through the legislature, sir. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any further questions? Senator Wigger?
Mr. I was going to move that Senate File 51 be recommended pass and referred to transportation.
Senator Perry.
Senator Cole.
And if I could just kind of do a quick sum up, I'd like to thank the committee for their time. I know that license plates, I think in transportation we're going to end up with a discussion on the number of plates, but I think as you heard from the testifiers, that this designation and the recognition for women's veterans, we are very proud of our service, and I just would appreciate the committee's support in that recognition. So, thank you.
Thank you. Senator Dibble?
Thanks, and I also, Mr. Chair and Senator Cook, I suspect we'll have even though it's a nominal expense to the state, still $12,000.
Right.
And license plate traditionally support themselves, so we'll probably have a discussion about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not a big deal.
All right.
See you in Senate Transportation, Senator Dibble.
Thank you. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I got here a minute late, but I support this and agree with the comments I heard, but I just want to compliment the testifier with the responsibility to do this for getting the Senate Majority Leader to author the bill. I can't tell you how many people wanted this bill and saying, can we get the Majority Leader to author the bill? And usually they say no, so... Brilliant move.
It helps that she's also a veteran.
Yes.
I don't look like a veteran, but
right.
I'm a veteran.
and Mr. Chairman, when we would see Senator Moe walk in with a bill, we knew immediately we had to vote for that bill. So,
thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
So, good
Senator Wigger renews his motion that Senate File 51 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Transportation. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails, and Senate File 51 is re-referred to transportation.
Thank you, members.
Thank you, Senator Koch.
Hey, doing well. How are you?
Well, sure. That was such good bipartisan togetherness. I'm sure it'll be the same on this next bill. Our next item on the agenda... Senate File 501, Senator Limmer.
Good joke.
Thank you.
There's always room for some levity.
I'd like to call Senator Koch to present my bill.
This guy. Welcome, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I need to correct you. It's Senate File 509 rather than
so
501.
Corrected.
I don't like to start out correcting a chairman of a committee before I make my presentation.
It's all right. I didn't have my glasses on.
It reminds me I got to get mine on, too. Mr. Chair,
Senator Limmer, before I let you get started, I think I need to call on Mr. Bodern. Again, we have a pretty... interesting bill here that could go all over from the left to the right, up and down. And so, Mr. Bodern, if you could focus us in on exactly what it is and why this bill is in front of this committee.
Mr. Chairman and members, there are several miscellaneous items that fit within the jurisdiction of the State Government Committee in the bill. I won't go through it section by section, but I will attempt to outline them for you. I think one of the major items is changes to the statewide voter registration system and some related duties that are imposed on the Secretary of State. So the question for the committee there is, what those additional duties are and how they affect the resources and funding available for the Secretary of State, since this committee has jurisdiction over the budget for that office. There is a rulemaking change or some different treatment given to rulemaking in the bill, and you'll find that on page 24. There's a short section that basically says any of the election law rules adopted by the Secretary of State need to be approved by the legislature, basically approved in a bill that is enacted in order to take effect. Then there is an appropriation of money from the Help America Vote Act account. That's money originally received from the federal government, and that's within this committee's budget jurisdiction. And finally, the bill establishes a task force that is within the purview of this committee as well. And you can find that language on page 47 of the bill. That's the Legislative Task Force on Electronic Roster Implementation. There are a variety of other items in the bill that are definitely not within the jurisdiction of the committee, such as basically the mechanics of how voter identification cards would be issued by driver and vehicle services, for example, things like that.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Bonner. And we were going to be diligent on staying on task with what Mr. Bonner has helped us with, so I would ask that all, including any testifiers, be aware of that. So, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 509 is the bill requiring Minnesota's election system to require a photo identification approved by the Minnesota state government for the purposes of voting. This would identify the person and assist in determining if the person actually lives in the precinct. The bill before you not only creates that requirement, but we're also sensitive to the needs of individuals that may not be able to afford an identification card of some sort that they may not have right now. There's an estimate of approximately 140,000 Minnesotans that go through life. I'm sure it would be difficult for them, but they go through life without any type of valid identification card that would have a photo of them on it. And so as a result, we do not want to impose any type of tax on those individuals. That would be considered unconstitutional. It would be considered a poll tax. And so we have created an opportunity for the state of Minnesota, for those who request it and are not of a high enough income level, they could request a photo identification card called the voter identification card. It's only for the purposes of voting. It's not for any other identification purpose, although when they seek that and apply for that card at a driver license agent office across Minnesota or at a county governing center, those individuals could, at their option, they may want to just go ahead with a full-fledged ID card. It may not be a driver's license, but it would be an ID card, but they would have that option at that point. The bill itself also provides some electronic means of reading ballots, but that would be at the option of a municipality or a political subdivision that would want to avail themselves of that, but it would be at their cost, not at state cost.
So if I could just interrupt here, because even as early as last night at my annual county townships banquet, there was questions on the requirement that the townships would have to buy these electronic machines. That is not true.
Mr. Chair, that was part of the early House bill. This bill was matched with that, but in the Elections Committee in the Senate, we removed those provisions. And right now the House has adopted or close to adopted almost all of our language as it's going through their body. Nevertheless, we've reduced the cost. There was some early costs of like $60+ million. We've reduced it down considerably down to the single-digit millions rather than 60. And we're now before you in order to get approval for roughly, I think, about a third of the money available. The first third came out of the Transportation Department. members may not know, but the Transportation Department is the one who gives the order to the Department of Public Safety to contract for all of our driver's licenses, all of our ID cards, and in this case, a new product called the voter identification card.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, before we go any further, I have an 842 amendment. This is a technical amendment. It's cleaning up some of the missing references, adding references. Some of the locations where we made mention of voter ID card was missing on some of the lines. It's purely a technical amendment. If council would like to maybe explain the amendment a little more in detail.
Senator Daley moves the A42 amendment. Mr. Bonner.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move through it fairly quickly unless there are questions about particular sections of that amendment. And looking at the amendment itself, basically the changes you see on page 1, lines 2 through 10, deal with the their conforming changes related to the electronic roster provisions. And the lengthier section of new language you see beginning on page 1, line 17, provides parallel treatment for proof of residence for the photo ID requirement. It's basically the same as what's in the bill for the election day registration and applies that to the proof of voting, the proof that's required before an individual can vote. There are a variety of other provisions at the bottom of that page that make some conforming changes and cleanup. On page 1, line 31 of the amendment, this deletes section 1 on page 23, which is the safe at home information requirements for the Secretary of State. There's another section later that's deleted that would be included with that. Those are items related to the fiscal note. I think the Secretary of State has said there would be a cost, so this removes that cost. Looking at page 2 of the amendment, these are lines 1 through 15, conforming changes that are intended to add a reference to the voter identification card, basically throughout a variety of the sections added to the bill. And then in the middle of page 2, you'll see that on page 2, line 18 of the amendment, page 39 deletes section 31. That gets rid of the other safe at home informational requirement. Then there are some other, I'm just trying to move through this fairly quickly, some other changes related to the electronic roster language to make it a little easier to understand. That goes through page 2, line 30. On page 2, line 31, this is another portion of the amendment that would have some fiscal implications. This, as I understand it, reduces reporting requirements and leaves out the it leaves only the county auditor for reporting requirements that are related to the electronic rosters, which would significantly reduce the amount of paperwork the Secretary of State is receiving. Then the remainder of the changes on page 2 are more technical in nature. And if you, at the bottom of page 2 of the amendment and the top of page 3, there are changes that clarify the minimum number of computers required at a polling place that's using the electronic roster system. Then beginning on page 3 and all the way through most of page 4, there's language that basically just cleans up the Legislative Task Force on Electronic Roster Implementation and just makes it a little clearer who's doing the appointing and how that task force should function in line with the review that those task forces are usually given in this committee. The one thing I'll point out on page 4 of that amendment, if I can make a suggestion here, that task force should have an expiration date. Typically, the expiration date is tied to the submission of the report that's required from the task force. So if Senator Limmer or whoever will move the amendment for him could incorporate just an instruction to council, and I'm sorry, that was, I guess that's Senator Daley moving the amendment. If we can just add an instruction to provide an expiration date related to the provision of the report that's required under Subdivision 2, I can add that. And then...
Mr. Bonner, is there a suggested date of...
Mr. Chairman, I think what works best and what has been done in the past is to say that the task force expires after the submission of the report required under Subdivision 2. And that way, if they're a day or two late, they kind of remain in existence until they submit the report. You don't pin it to the December 1st date. Sometimes, for whatever reason, there are delays in the submission of those reports. And that pretty much takes care of the remainder of the amendment.
All right. Senator Daley.
Mr. Chair, I'll make that. I'll move that with that language that was just mentioned.
Mr. Chair, I believe Senator that's a reason. That's a reasonable addition to the amendment.
All right.
I agree.
Mr. Chair, I had a question of Senator Limmer on the amendment.
Hang on one second, Senator. So would you repeat that verbiage again, Mr. Bonner?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. On page 4 of the amendment, after line 33, this is going into a little more detail, add a new subdivision 5 with a headnote expiration, and the new language would read, the task force expires after the submission of the report required under subdivision 2.
All right. On the amendment to the A42 amendment, any further questions on that? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Member prevails. Senator Wigger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Limmer, on the membership for the task force on electronic roster implementation, I noticed that you didn't have school districts included. And as you know, they're involved in administering elections. Would that be an oversight, or would you be open to include a representative from the Minnesota School Board Association that would be similarly qualified as you have for townships and municipalities and counties?
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, throughout the entire discussion of this bill, through the variety of amendments, that question has never been asked.
Now that it has?
Pardon me?
Now that it has.
Sure. I don't have any difficulty with adding a designee of the, you mentioned the Minnesota School Board Association. Or
yes,
would it be a
and
school?
And Mr. Chair, we could have a placeholder, some type of language, but I think it'd be important to include that group with.
Well, Mr. Chair, one question just for discussion sake, Senator Wigger. School boards, is it the school board or the school district suppose they're the same, aren't they?
Senator Wigger.
Mr. Chair, excuse me, they are different. The school district is the entity, the school board being the elected group, and you refer to organizations like the League of Minnesota Cities, and the MSBA, the School Boards Association, would be that group that would be the representative.
Mr. Chair, the only reason I ask the question is just to make sure that whatever entity it is, it's the one who authorizes the school referendums or the school board elections. I just don't know which organization that would be, and that's really what we want, isn't it?
Senator Wigger.
Mr. Chair, it's a local issue as to the authorization by the school board locally. But I think you're looking for perspective, insight, guidance from groups that are affected by elections. And
sure.
So to that extent, it would be the state MSBA.
All right. Thank you.
Would offer if Mr. Bodern wanted to craft some language that could be added at any appropriate point, just with that understanding.
Do you follow that? Mr. Bonner.
Mr. Chairman, I think we can take care of it here. So looking at the A42 amendment, the amendment would be on page 3, line 5, delete 16 and insert 17. And then on, I think the right place to add this member would be after the township and municipal elections administrators. So on page 3, line 32 of the amendment, after that line, insert a new clause 12. One member who is, and I guess I would suggest, who is experienced in elections administration, appointed by the Minnesota School Boards Association. I think that's the correct reference. And then just an instruction to renumber the remaining clauses.
So moved.
Senator Wigger moves his amendment.
Mr. Chair, I would agree with that.
All right.
Friendly amendment.
All those in favor of the Senator Wigger's amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. Senator Limmer.
Okay. Mr. Chair, thank you.
Excuse me, Senator Ortman.
Senator Limmer, welcome to the State Government Committee. I haven't heard this bill before, and I have a question. I was really interested in what you said about the 145,000 Minnesotans that don't have identification. Where does that number come from? And does that number suggest how many would be eligible to vote? Or is that not included in your estimate?
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Ortman, that count amount comes from an estimate from the Department of Public Safety. And they're the ones who handle all of the identification cards, driver licenses in the state of Minnesota anyway. They're rather informed about that. That was their estimate, 144,000. They cannot tell us how many of the 144,000 would be willing to vote in some future election or not. But the question is making it available to making a voter ID card available if we go down the system so that there's no impediment or obstacle to us to someone simply because we may be changing or adding a requirement at the time we vote to validate your identity, that we don't impede anyone's right to vote when they go forward. And biggest concern was the potential cost to someone who may be an indigent, extremely low income, and that we're making it available through this bill to provide the widest opportunity for those individuals to cast a ballot.
Senator Ortman.
How will it operate so that when those driver's license agents issue the voter identification card, how will they determine that person's eligibility in order to be given a voter identification card?
Well, it's just like anywhere else. If you go in and seek a valid identification card, you're going to have to bring some corresponding documentation with you to determine who you are and where you live. It's the same way that a driver's license or a Minnesota ID card, it's the same requirements.
So,
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, if they have evidence of a bill that comes to their home or something like that, then they can get a voter ID. I'm just wondering, how do we determine at that point that we've got eligible voters before issuing this voter identification?
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to introduce Dan McGrath from Minnesota Majority, who's one of the sponsors of this bill.
And, Mr. McGrath.
He can help answer that question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senator Ortman. The Department of Public Safety has records now of people that are in the country, for example, with non-citizens that are here on a visa. And they indicate on a person's driver's license currently, if they're on a visa with an expiration date, that's called status check. And the same check would be used for the voter identification card that's issued by DPS. And the requirements to get the card are just as robust as to get a driver's license, so you'll have to provide a birth certificate or proof that you're legally present in the country. In order to get the driver's license. For the voter ID, if you're not a citizen, they're not going to give you one. And the felon check is something that's handled on the election end of the process, the real-time verification of their eligibility at the polling place.
Thank you very much.
All right. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was really curious what the difference between a Minnesota ID card, which is not a driver's license, and the voter card is. They kind of sound kind of the same. Can you explain the difference there?
Mr. McGrath.
Mr. Chairman and Senator, the voter identification card is really a matter of convenience for the Department of Public Safety. So if you go to vote under this bill, you'll be able to provide your driver's license or your identification card or your voter ID card. The voter ID card exists so that DPS can continue to collect revenue on the regular identification card. So there's a separate class created just for voting, and those are the ones that will be issued for no charge.
So essentially it's exactly the same, just no charge.
Mr. McGrath.
Yes, exactly. Okay.
Right. Senator Limmer, do you have any other amendments?
Well, there should be an amendment directing the committee to funding. Part of our funding comes from the HAVA account, that's used by the Secretary of State's office. There's roughly a $2.5 million undesignated portion of that account. I do want you to know that the Secretary of State has a different opinion of what how to use that money, so we're a little bit at a disagreement with them. But
all right, Senator Thompson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, thank you. I think it's the right time probably here to offer the A43 amendment, which addresses this issue. So I'm offering the A43 amendment to Senate File 509, and I assume that will be getting passed out. I can briefly describe it, and if I don't do a good job, perhaps Mr. Bodern can help me out here. But where you want to look, members, is at page 49 of the bill, page 49, and specifically lines 14 to 18, which would be the operative language in Section 17. What this amendment would do, Mr. Chairman and members, is it would designate $2.5 million in fiscal 2012 from the Help America Vote Act to this particular cause, and then also from the general fund, it would designate $750,000 in fiscal year 2012 and an additional $750,000 in fiscal year 2013. And then there is a bit of additional language on equipment upgrades, voter education, and the like. Mr. Bodern, did I hit the significant points there?
Mr. Bodern. Mr. Chairman, Senator Thompson, absolutely. The only thing I would add is lines 9 and 10 also clarify that there is a base appropriation that would continue in fiscal 2014 and 2015 of the $750,000.
Thank you, Mr. Bodern. Mr. Chairman, I would therefore offer the A43 amendment.
Mr. Senator Thompson offers the A43 amendment. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, let me ask, maybe Mr. Lundeen or Senator Limmer, is it anticipated that the HAVA money is one-time money that will never be needed again, or is the total appropriation anticipated to be ongoing?
Mr. Lundeen.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Cohen. The $2.5 million HAVA money is one-time money. That's why we have the general fund money ongoing into the base to pay for the outgoing costs.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't make my question clear. So in future bienniums, the $2.5 is a startup cost that will not be needed? Is that correct?
Senator Limmer?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Okay. Because I assume, Mr. Chairman, we won't see the HAVA money again. And so the only money we're going to bring into the general fund for ongoing costs will be the $750 for each year of the biennium?
That's correct.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to ask Senator Thompson if he could tell us a little bit about if we take $2.5 million out of the Help America Vote, number one, how much money are we taking out of that account? I don't know how big is this account. Are we defunding, or is it a 10%, 50%, and what is this funding currently dedicated for?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Torres Ray, I don't know. What I know is that I personally believe that this is a worthwhile cause. I believe it's a proper fund for this to come out of. I'm certain that someone could provide information as to the size of that fund. I don't have the specifics on that myself.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, instead of me speaking on behalf of the Secretary of State's office, I'm sure there might be someone in the room that might be able to answer that question.
Senator Limmer or Senator Thompson, there is a reason you're taking money out of this account. You, Senator Thompson, you said this is appropriate to take it out of this account because what we're doing is an appropriate use of the dollars. So I want to know.
Senator Torres Ray, my understanding, and I'm sure Ms. Fraser will go through this, but my understanding as I look at that, and maybe Ms. Fraser can answer this, that there's some duplication or overlap in some of the items under the HAVA account now and this bill. And I think with that, Ms. Fraser, if you would like to introduce yourself and run through this with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Beth Fraser with the Office of the Secretary of State. And there is approximately $2.5 million left in the Help America Vote Act account. That's what we expect to have at the end of this fiscal year. And that is the end of the Help America Vote Act money. We believe that that money needs to be spent primarily for ongoing maintenance and management and support of the statewide voter registration system. Since the state received the Help America Vote Act funds in 2004, over $10 million has been spent on developing that system, and industry standards dictate that you spend between 15 and 20% on ongoing maintenance each year, which would mean that we should be spending between $1.5 and $2 million on maintenance each year. Well, there's only $2.5 million left in the account, so there's not even enough to spend what the industry would recommend on maintenance. We believe that the money needs to be spent primarily on maintenance for and ongoing management of the statewide voter registration system and the election reporting system, which is the system in which election results are uploaded so that on election night you can look and see who's ahead and who won. We also need funds for federal reporting and grant management. The counties also have Help America Vote Act funds, and we need to continue to manage those grants. In the past several years, the legislature has passed several bills requiring data verification and data matching, for example, looking at non-citizen data, looking at felon data, looking at data of people that have changed their addresses to update voter registrations. And the verification that we do with the Department of Public Safety every time somebody updates the registration. And we believe funds need to be spent to continue to implement that and to program the system to make doing those ongoing matches easier. In addition, this is a redistricting biennium, and the statewide voter registration system was built in 2003 and 2004 after the last redistricting, and it currently doesn't have the functionality necessary to allow local election officials to go in and update voter records. After you all draw the lines, the cities and counties and school districts all go in and draw their lines, and then we need to be sure that every voter's record accurately reflects not only the congressional district that they're in, but everything down to the school board member district. And we need to program functionality into the statewide voter registration system so that local election officials can do those updates in a way where their updates can be tested before being made live, because clearly if you're changing, you know, hundreds or hundreds of thousands of voters at a time, you want to be sure you got it right before it's live in the system. We would dedicate funds to training and ongoing support for election administrators. We would put some money into programming the system so that electronic poll books could be used. That's a piece of the bill, and we actually believe that a different model would be more appropriate. But we do believe that electronic poll books could ease election administration and help save some local costs if they were done somewhat differently. We want to do some programming so that voters in mail ballot precincts, so small precincts in greater Minnesota where all the registered voters get their ballots by mail, we want those voters to be able to track their ballots. There isn't currently functionality for that. And we would put some money into voter outreach and education. And so that, we believe, takes the final $2.5 million that's left in this account. And we don't believe that there is sufficient funds to, in addition, do what would be required by this bill.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Fraser, so from your perspective, the use of these dollars will limit your ability to do all of these work that you are doing right now for the statewide voter registration portions that you just described very clearly. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Senator Torres Ray, yes. We believe that we would be sorely lacking in adequate funds to to provide the ongoing maintenance and management of the system and some of these other functions. And, you know, we're very concerned because the real users of the system are the county auditors primarily and city clerks to a certain extent. And so if we're not able to maintain the system and, you know, fix bugs or, you know, streamline processes, it's them who's going to actually bear the real burden of that. And, you know, obviously elections are a critical piece of our democracy, and we need to be sure that we have the systems and support in place to make sure that they go smoothly.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Frazier, I don't know if you had an opportunity to share this report with members about the facts about ineligibility voting and voter fraud that was put together by the county attorneys with respect to this issue and how they've put together a very compelling argument, I think, report, members, about really articulating clearly that this is not a problem. Could you speak to this? Because I think the two connect. So the county attorneys are saying, you know, we really don't have this problem. Are they saying, could you please summarize what, in their opinion, is a problem and why do we need this money where you have it now? Could you connect the two?
And I just, not that I don't want you, you're going to answer Senator Torres Ray's question, but I want to make sure, I think we're getting just a little bit outside of the jurisdiction that Mr. Bodern explained early on. But, Ms. Frazier, I do want you to answer the question.
And Mr. Chairman, I want to make absolutely sure I am focusing my questions only on the issues that are relevant to this committee. This is absolutely only about what the staff just said is our responsibility in this bill, which is your responsibility, Ms. Frazier, and your and the state auditors.
Sure.
I want to make absolutely sure that I will stay exactly where you told us we need to stay.
So you're questioning the voter registration duties? Is that?
No, I am asking, Mr. Chairman, I am asking questions related to the Secretary of State's responsibility to do the work with this funding and what they feel is their obligation and is this committee's responsibility to clarify what they do with this money, what they are not going to do as a result of our decision today. So I'm going to focus my questions then on precisely the Secretary of State's office.
Thank you. I understand that. Ms. Frazier.
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres Ray, I am familiar with that report about that was compiled by a couple groups based upon a survey of the county attorneys. And it reflects our experience that each election, there are a handful of people who cast ballots who are not eligible to do so, and that they are primarily people who have been convicted of felonies and are still serving their sentences. In most cases, they were not aware that they were not allowed to vote, and that is the to the extent there is an issue with people who are not eligible casting ballots, that is the area where that occurs. And some of the data matching that we asked you to authorize and has been authorized by the legislature, especially with the Department of Corrections, has allowed us to, before the election, flag anyone who was registered to vote if they have been since convicted of a felony, so that if they come into the polling place, election judges know that there's a real question about their eligibility, and after the election to identify anyone who was ineligible and did cast a ballot, and so that information can be provided to the county attorneys for potential prosecution.
So those dollars allocated to data verification and matching, that's where that would fall then?
Mr. Chair, that's a piece of where that would fall.
All right. Senator Dibble, did you have?
I was just going to mention, Mr. Chair, that in terms of adhering to the jurisdiction of the committee, we already opened that door with Senator Ortman and walked through it. She was asking about the mechanics of the issuance of the ID, which was stated early on by Council Bodern that was outside the purview of our committee, so we should maintain a consistency.
Okay, so noted. So we're one and one, maybe?
All right, but I might mention an issue that's not quite the purview later, so I reserve my right to do that.
Thank you. Senator Limmer, or Senator Cohen had a question.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Fraser, so what you're suggesting is in Senator Thompson's whichever 843 amendment, so the dollars, would you want the dollars directed toward some kind of a felon program? Is that, if that's the problem you're seeing, this bill really doesn't address that, does it?
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair and Senator Cohen, we would, we have asked for, and the Senate position actually is based upon what the Senate has passed, appropriating the Help America Vote Act funds to our office. And if the Help America Vote Act funds are appropriated to our office, this is, I've outlined basically how they would be used. And a piece of that is continuing to implement the data matching provisions that have been put into place. If the money is instead redirected to exclusively to implementation of this bill, I'm not sure how we would do the other pieces that need to be done, including the programming for the redistricting, the data matching, and the maintenance that's required for the system.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
All right, so, Mr. Fraser, you raise other concerns in terms of other responsibilities that your office has. Obviously, the redistricting concern is a once-a-decade concern, but this is the year. This is the time when apparently you need the money for that purpose. I guess that raises a question I hadn't thought of. But you're suggesting, Mr. Chairman, if I can ask, so in the last election, and I think Senator Torres Ray referenced the county attorney's report, how many felons was it determined had attempted to vote who should not have voted?
Ms. Fraser?
Mr. Chair and Senator Cohen, I don't remember off the top of my head. I can get that number, but I don't have it.
Okay, but
Senator Cohen?
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Fraser, maybe I should direct this to Senator Limmer. Now, this bill won't stop felons from voting, will it?
Well,
Senator Limmer.
I don't know if that's the appropriate question. The part of the bill does require data matching for felons to be identified. So if they do attempt to vote, they can be immediately determined if they are at the time they vote.
But Mr. Chairman, Senator,
Senator
Limmer,
Cohen.
Hypothetically, if I'm a felon, I would have a. It's a hypothetical, as best I know. I would be eligible to get a driver's license. I'd have the photo ID, so I could register to vote based upon that. Because I don't think there's anything on the driver's license that would indicate that somebody is a ex-felon or somebody who's still on probationary status. And so if that's the problem, is there some way? And again, Mr. Chairman, maybe not in the jurisdiction of this committee, but because we've got jurisdiction over the money, I'm wondering if money should be directed for that purpose to try to determine how to make sure those folks don't vote if that's the heart of the problem, at least based on what Ms. Fraser is saying.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, I have to chuckle because you and I have both been here a while, and just last year a majority of the Senate members voted to allow felons to vote. And now we're concerned about them not voting. The bill that I have provides, like Ed mentioned, it's a bill that part of it requires data matching for felons, so that if someone does come in, it's very foreseeable. One could be on a 3-year felony, and they're being released early. They certainly were registered in the last, perhaps the second to the last election. Their name would still be on a registration when they would go, or if someone would go and use their name. And they could present their same driver's license that they had within a 3-year period of time because they are upgraded every 4 years. So one who is a felon could have a valid driver's license for identification purposes and go to the next election after they're out, perhaps they're on parole or probation, and they could enter with the intent of voting. This bill provides a data match at that moment. You could determine whether or not they have a felon record and that they would then be not allowable to vote.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
I do have Senator Ortman next, and I'm just going to say before we move on that we have a lot of testifiers, and I'm sure it's going to be brought up. I'm thinking that we're getting broader and broader here, but I do want to let you finish yours, and then Senator Ortman.
Well, the only finish was Ms. Fraser had her hand up, I think, to respond
okay.
to that. That was
Ms. Fraser.
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, one of the differences between this bill and what we do now is right now we do data matching before the election and after the election. And that allows, for example, our office to look at the data matches. And as we've been doing these data matches, we have discovered that there are often false positives. So, for example, there are two individuals with exactly the same name and exactly the same birth date, one who lives in Moorhead and one who lives in Minneapolis, and, you know, one is a citizen and one is not. And I think a concern is that if, instead of doing these data matches ahead of time when they can actually be looked into further, if you're having election judges in the polling place look on a list and say, oh, no, you know, it's your name, it's your birth date, it must be you, you can't vote, or you have to vote a provisional ballot, that's going to lead to the disenfranchisement of eligible voters. Now, the bill does allow you to cast a provisional ballot, and to get it counted, you would have to go down to the county auditor's office. You would need to provide proof that you're not a felon. Or that you are a citizen. I'm not sure how I could prove that I'm not a felon, if that were the question. I don't have a not felon card. I don't know about you, but I mean, it seems like it may be putting voters in an impossible situation and putting election judges in a situation where they're making judgments on the spot without being able to verify things about a person's eligibility, and I think that's problematic.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to ask, are we on the A43 amendment?
Yes, we are.
All right. I'm not sure why this is so complicated. I think it's pretty straightforward that we are concerned about election integrity. And for me, when it comes to the funds we have available, it is our job as policymakers, as legislators, to put each dollar to its highest and best use. And I understand that you have preferences for where you'd like that money to go. I heard you say processes, maintenance, administrative costs, education and outreach, data matching. Those are preferences, but I don't believe that they are the highest and best use, because in this bill we have the alternative of addressing election integrity and the public confidence that goes along with the election integrity. And I don't know how you could use that money in any better way. It is the primary job we all have, is to make sure that these elections are as fair as possible. And so I appreciate Senator Limmer's effort. I know this has been a very long haul. I think this is the best way we can use this money. From what I've heard, I'm not convinced that there's any higher or better use for the dollars. So I would support the A43 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I would
Senator
like to speak
Torres,
to the amendment.
Right?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Ortman, I really appreciate what you just said, because I think that's the fundamental difference here. We absolutely, I believe, agree in a very bipartisan way on election integrity. We absolutely agree on that. I am not going to disagree. And we need to do whatever is that we need to do to protect our system and the integrity of our system. And Minnesota is one of the best in the nation. So I believe that a lot of what we need to do is preserve that. For that reason, I would like to amend this amendment and would like to delete line 1.5. And so that we do not take money away from a system that currently invests in getting voter verification from beginning to end, and as Ms. Fraser really articulated very clearly, you know, the data matching before and after is absolutely essential to the system. They need to do this verification. They need to compare. What she said was very important. You need to know this person, you know, who's here and here, where, you know, is this the same person, is not the same person. We're taking two $0.5 million out of that account, and I think that we need to prevent that from happening. So I would like to amend the A43 amendment to the lead line 1.5 so that we preserve the funding that is currently in place for the work that the office does with voter verification and election integrity, Mr. Chairman. And I would like a roll call on that vote.
Senator, Mr. Bodern, do you have that?
Mr. Chairman, that's it's an engrossable amendment, and I think we just need to delete the clause 2 provision on line 1.6 as well, just the paren 2, close paren.
Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, I would encourage the members to vote against Senator Torres-Ray's amendment to the amendment. To piggyback on what Senator Ortman said, we should put our dollars in elections to the place where they will get the best and the quickest return. I said it during the campaign, and I'll say it again. I see nothing more fundamental to a fair voting process than people having to prove that they are who they say they are. And it's reasonable to put our resources toward that effort.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would oppose the amendment.
All right. Senator Dibble.
Two things, Mr. Chair. One is I wanted to respond to Senator Limmer's earlier comment that we voted last year to allow felons to vote. That's not true. We have a process in place in Minnesota that allows those whose voting rights have been restored to vote, and what we attempted to do was to create a procedure, a system where that is made more apparent to folks who have a full right as citizens to vote and to seek that process to have their voting rights restored. So I'm sure Senator Limmer did not intend to mislead anyone in this room or the public by saying that. But that was the effect of his comment, and so that the record needed to be corrected in that regard. There was an earlier comment that somehow this is the highest and best use of this HAVA money, except for the fact that there is no need to spend this money in this fashion, as is evidenced by the research and the investigation, the report of the county attorneys. There's no need to do this and no need to spend this money in this fashion. We don't have the problem that this bill purports to solve. So I would support the Torres-Ray Amendment.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, I will check my memory and check my memory. That makes sense. I'll check the facts, Senator Dibble. If I made an error in representing anyone's vote, it was inadvertent. But I do know that the Senate chamber has voted on that in recent years. I might be off a year.
Senator Wicker.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, briefly on that, that was a bipartisan effort, and we don't have to go any further on that, but I do appreciate the record being clarified on that. I speak in support of Senator Torres-Ray's amendment, and also I believe the overwhelming majority of county attorneys, of local officials, that are very aware of the need for implementing the stated purpose for the funds for HAVA, and with very tight funds, with redistricting, with a variety of challenges that the Secretary of State's office has referred to, we can't just raid that fund for the purposes that have been stated. I respectfully submit that for those two dozen cases that may be identified, that is wrong, but as Senator Cohen said, let's focus like a laser to get that corrected, but recognizing that you still can get a driver's license, and I don't know if you can prevent it. The money is so tight, and to raid that fund and to definitely have a negative impact on the elections for all counties and cities, municipalities, districts, by carrying out what's the intent of HAVA would not be a prudent use of those funds. So I support Senator Torres-Ray's amendment.
Thank you. On the Torres-Ray amendment, a roll call has been requested and granted. Secretary, take the roll.
Chairman Perry?
Nay.
Senator Carlson?
Nay.
Senator Cohen?
Yes.
Senator Daley?
No.
Senator Dibble?
Yes.
Senator Gazelka?
No.
Senator Goodwin?
Yes.
Senator Lilly?
No.
Senator Ortman?
No.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Torres Ray?
Yes.
Senator Wieger?
Yes.
Being there be seven nays and five yeses, the amendment does not prevail. Back to the A43 amendment. Seeing no other
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer an amendment to the amendment, okay, as long as we're talking about spending money and things that cost dollars in your bill, Senator Limmer. I have an A45 amendment, and I just thought it might as well just offer the amendment at this point to Senator Limmer's amendment. We'll just talk about the money stuff right now.
Okay.
That out of the way. Because I'm sure everyone will agree and will.
Senator Dibble offers the A45 amendment. Senator Dibble, while it's being passed out.
And I'll offer that as an amendment to Senator Limmer's A whatever.
A2.
Is that right? No.
Senator Thompson's A43.
A43. Thank you. So, Senator, Mr. Chair, and Senator Limmer, I know that you've amended the bill to some degree, trying to address the impact on local government, but nevertheless, impacts on local government persist. And you said, you know, if they're going to opt into some of this electronic means of verification at the polls and the like, they do it at their own expense. But there still are a number of expenses. I mean, if they do opt in, of course, they're going to have to go to that expense. And I think we can appreciate that the process will be much, much more manual and labor intensive, so it doesn't come cost-free if they don't opt for the electronic systems and the corresponding internet access. But there's all the staff and time and system expenses related to the provisional voting process, staffing, different means of hand counting, the retention of materials, absentee boards, additional training, voter data entry, et cetera, et cetera. So this is an attempt simply to recognize that while the local impact note, I think, cited $8.3 million, and it might not be that much, and so we have a provision that allows the amount that's not used to go back to the general fund, it still tries to mitigate the impact on local units of government who would otherwise have to bear some significant additional expense if this bill were to be enacted into law. So this comes as an unfunded mandate, and I think it's our responsibility if we decide there's nothing better and no better way to spend our money than to protect the integrity of our elections. And as other characterizations, I would not characterize this as that. I think we should step up and take responsibility for that effect on our local units, Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to request a roll call vote on this.
Roll call has been requested and granted. Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, $8.3 million is probably more a discussion and knowledge of what your department or your division is capable of doing at this time. Half of this appropriation, or nearly half of this appropriation for the total bill, has already been rectified by the Transportation Department. I believe that the plan we have before us is an adequate one, and it's enough to do the job. I don't believe that this amendment is necessary. I oppose the amendment.
Thank you. Senator Dibble, where did this $8.3 million come from?
Mr. Chair, there was a local impact note that was prepared by the Office of Minnesota Management and Budget. It was done, and I know how much respect we have for that office and the professional work they do.
It all depends on who you're talking to, Senator Dibble.
And they have a whole methodology they explain in their local impact note how they came by this number. What they cite is ongoing local government costs of four in 2013, another four in 2014, another 4.3 in 2015, one-time local government costs of 4.1. So this really just addresses the initial fiscal year 2013 of about $8.3 million. But I will note that there are ongoing local government costs of upwards of $4 million.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to have Dan McGrath address this.
Mr. McGrath.
Mr. Chairman, Senators, I had an opportunity to review this local impact note a while back. Unfortunately, it's based on very, very outdated information. It's based on a very old draft of House File 210, I believe. And it includes money for poll books, which are now optional to the counties, and internet connectivity, which, as I understand, has been removed from the bill. So it's really, there's no reason to rely on this document.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I excuse my freshmanness on this question, but I'm wondering about the appropriateness of this at this time as an amendment to Senator Thompson's amendment. I wonder if this wouldn't be more appropriate to discuss once Senator Thompson's amendment has been taken care of. I'm reading things here, page 58, line 9. I guess I would just like to have some direction from Mr. Bodden about the appropriateness at this time.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if there's a particular objection to it. I guess in the absence of a specific concern, you know, I don't know that I can answer that. It's an amendment to the amendment and in order in that regard.
Senator Wigger.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble had a question. At 1.7, would you be open to a friendly amendment after cities, comma, to insert school districts, comma?
Mr. Chair.
I don't believe we can do that on an amendment to the amendment.
A friendly amendment.
Senator Dibble, are you amiable?
I can accept that, particularly if it really draws some more votes, Mr. Chair.
My vote. And Mr. Chair, it embraces the total family of local control, those entities that are impacted, consistent with the earlier Limmer Amendment that was adopted.
And Mr. Chair, I think it would have to appear on line 10 as well.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I will just incorporate that and make that my amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Just a question, being that this information that we've gotten is so outdated, are you interested in withdrawing your amendment based
Chair,
on the information from Mr. McGrath?
Mr. Chair, I disagree with Mr. McGrath. Certainly a number of local jurisdictions will find it important to opt for. You know, it's optional now at their own expense, as Senator Limmer said, but, you know, I think some will find it very important given the volume of folks that are going to be coming in to vote in their particular jurisdictions, A, B. There are still significant expense that we haven't removed local units' expense, and I think that comes in the form of it's not just for these electronic poll books, but it's for a number of other things that local units are going to have to do that they don't now do. And like I said, any money not used reverts to the general fund, so the whole 8.3 won't necessarily be used.
On the A43 amendment, a roll call has been requested. Secretary, take the roll.
Mr. Chair.
On the Dibble amendment to the A43 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I wanted to speak.
Senator
in opposition
Ortman.
To the amendment. Just a couple of quick points. I do agree that the number is overstated, but I think more importantly, it's up to us to set the statewide standards for fair elections, and I think we need to do that. And the local elections are also at stake here. And so I think it is appropriate for us to, if there's an unfunded mandate, then to do that, to say that all elections should meet a certain standard here. It is for us to do that on a statewide policy basis, and I hope members will oppose the Dibble amendment.
Secretary, take the roll.
Chairman Perry.
Nay.
Senator Carlson.
No.
Senator Cohen.
Yes.
Senator Daley.
No.
Senator Dibble.
Yes.
Senator Gazelka.
No.
Senator Goodwin.
Yes.
Senator Lilly.
No.
Senator Ortman.
No.
Senator Thompson.
No.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Yes.
Senator Wieger.
Yes.
On the Dibble amendment, there were seven nays, five yeas. Amendment does not prevail.
Mr. Chairman, I have one more question about the amendment to the author, please.
Are you on the A43 amendment?
That is correct.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I have a question for Senator Limmer, actually, on this amendment. And the reason, Senator Limmer, is because I have worked with you for 4 years, and I know how thorough you are and how I have respected really a lot of the input and a lot of the questioning in bills in the past, questions that I have appreciated on my bills. So I want to hear your thoughts about, I would like to hear your response with respect to allocating funding for this purpose. In here, we are proposing to get funding out of the Help America Vote account into this bill that you're proposing. And what I read in this report is that voter impersonation in the state of Minnesota didn't happen, that no one was convicted on voter impersonation. Double voting, that we have no one convicted. Non-citizen voting, and this is an issue that I care very deeply about, and you know this, because I am trying so hard to get new immigrants who are citizens to get out to vote. They're not voting as much as I would like them to vote. So I am always concerned about how I frame this, because there's just so many people who are citizens who do not vote. And here we're saying, well, but there are some non-citizens who are voting, is what is being said, right? So I look at the report. Nine voters were investigated last year, and none was convicted. Nine people were investigated, none were convicted out of the thousands of people, you know, that voted. Underage voting, 56 underage, 56, very small number. None was convicted. Now, the felon number that you talk about, and you said you were going to get the numbers, 26 convictions out of that, 26, okay? And then coercion, no investigation. So those are the categories that are usually, you know, of concern that you've said, you know, we really need to get to this investigation. We need to know who's doing this, and we need to put money into that. Senator Limmer, if these are the results of investigation of a very serious, I hope you consider this to be a serious report. I would like to hear if you trust this investigation. Why do you think we need to take money out of this account to put it into something that clearly has been said is not a problem?
Mr. Chair,
Senator Limmer,
Senator Torres Ray, our citizens deserve a secure, safe ballot system that has the integrity of what we all hold dear. You and I would agree, I hope, with that. And as we look at the existing standard, that a person can come to a voting booth and simply with the use of their signature, sign on a dotted line and continue to go in and vote without any further seeking of their validity, of whether or not they're the person that they are, that they live in the area that they claim they're from in that particular precinct location, I think doesn't measure up to the standard that we could provide the people of Minnesota. This is a question about establishing a system that we can really live up to the word integrity. We use a driver's license or an ID card to do just about everything in the state of Minnesota. You need it to board a plane. You need it to buy a ticket on a plane. You need to have driver's license to transact simple transactions with a check or with a credit card. You can't open a bank account without some kind of photo identification. You know, even in the city of Maple Grove, where I come from, I have to present a photo identification when I'm using the city leaf dump and putting leaves in a service that the city provides. And yet, at the very same time, some governing authority is demanding a photo identification to drop yard waste off at a city leaf dump, but for some reason we turn our head back and we don't want to look at any photo identification when a person is claiming to go to a voting booth and say, I'm John Smith, where do I sign? That isn't enough anymore. 21st century determines or demands that we provide a system that's commensurate with the technology that this society creates. And it creates a better system, and it assures an integrity and an honesty in the election system that I think the public deserves. I believe that by providing free identification cards, that those that may be less fortunate than others will improve election turnout. I think it'll make it easier for the elderly to cast votes. I think it'll be far easier for the poor. I find that some of the arguments are sometimes not not necessarily appropriate for the discussion because it goes in far wider ranges than what this bill does. There's 8 going on 12 states that are either have already created a photo identification that's been sustained by their state's Supreme Court and by the United States Supreme Court. This is not anything that's unconstitutional. Now, there may be a few people that will come up and say that, but the only people that can really say something is unconstitutional is a court of law. And the courts are saying that the bill that this is modeled after is constitutional. Now, maybe we want to rely on the old 19th and 20th century method of assuring the integrity of our elections. Maybe just a simple signature is good enough. I don't think so. I think those days are gone, and we're now in a world where we have the technology, we have the means, and we're even providing the free cards for those that can't afford it. This is an issue where its time has come, and I think we would be foolish not to take this opportunity. As you know, the backdrop of this legislative session is that we're a little tight on money, but I think that being tight on money isn't necessarily should be the impediment to every idea that we consider in the legislature. And I think this is as some of the comments from other senators have said, this is the number one issue when it comes to elections in the state of Minnesota. We must have a system that reflects an integrity of our state and our people before anything else. And if the system is grounded in those principles, the system will not fail and will encourage many more people to turn out and vote.
Senator Thompson renews the A43 amendment.
Request
all
a roll
in favor.
Call.
Call requested. Secretary, take the roll.
Chairman Perry.
Nay. Yes.
Right the first time.
I knew you were going to say that.
Senator Carlson.
Yes.
Senator Cohen.
No.
Senator Daley.
Yes.
Senator Dibble.
No.
Senator Gazelka.
Yes.
Senator Goodwin. No. Senator Lilly.
Yes.
Senator Olson.
Yes.
Senator Ortman.
Yes.
Senator Thompson.
Yes.
Senator Torres Ray.
No.
Senator Wieger.
No.
Being there's 8 yeses and 5 noes, the amendment prevails. Let's hear some testimony on Senate File 509. I believe Andy Sillick, I believe.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Andy Sillick. I am the president of the Minnesota Voters Alliance.
and I appreciate the opportunity to speak today. It was a last-minute thing. I didn't even know if I was going to be able to come down, but I thought it was very important, even though I've testified at about five different hearings thus far. I don't know how long this is going to continue. But thanks for your time. I want to focus on just a couple of areas. I agree with Senator Ortman 100% that, and also Senator Thompson, that the most important use of our money has to be protecting the confidence and protecting the integrity of our election system. And just to touch on that, it's been said here by Senators Torres-Ray and by Dibble that we don't really have a problem. I want to point to one specific thing here, and I'll keep it really brief. The most fundamental problem that I had, and I wish I would have brought our 3,000 notarized signatures from St. Paul to show you that voters don't have much confidence, but I didn't have time to go run to my trunk and get them. But keep in mind, when voters vote and or register to vote, not only on election day, but the entire year, they are sent a postal verification card, PVC card. In 2008, 35 to 38,000, somewhere in that ballpark, were returned undeliverable. What do we do with those undeliverable postcards? We flag them in the SVRS, but we don't check them till the next election. That deeply troubles me and every single person that I've ever talked to about this issue. The fact is that when you have 38,000 postal verification cards, it was twice as many as 2004 and 2006 combined. We also know that ACORN was responsible for many, if not the majority, of those newly registered voters. That is troubling because consider that's a group that was indicted on voter fraud in at least 14 states. That is a serious, serious problem to me. What did the Supreme Court say in Crawford versus Marion County? The Supreme Court said, how can a system instill public confidence if no safeguards exist to detect or deter voter fraud? I would argue that our system does very little to detect and deter voter fraud. And I just want to make one comment regarding the county attorney's report over there, which I have not read. I'm just pretty much reading what's in the media. But there is a Star and Tribune op-ed just a few weeks ago by County Attorney Mike Freeman, Hennepin County Attorney. And I just want to point out two sentences that Mike Freeman said, and then I'll conclude. He says here that the legislation has been introduced that would intentionally create barriers for otherwise eligible voters. I almost look at that as slanderous. The fact is, there's no intentional. I don't know anybody that's behind this that's intentionally trying to create barriers for eligible voters. And I take real offense to that. I believe this is an intentional move to create barriers for illegal voters. Finally, on Mike Freeman, he says, how many people will discover on election day that they cannot vote because their driver's license address is not accurate? Apparently, Mr. Freeman didn't read any of the bills. Specifically, the one Mr. Limmer is proposing, that Senator Limmer is proposing, is that there's something called provisional ballots, and that's when someone doesn't have a license or something happens on the last day, on election day, they can still cast a provisional ballot and have their vote counted. So with that, I just want to thank you for the testimony, Senators, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Our next testifier is Sherry Knuth. Testifiers, I want to remind you, we have four directions according to Mr. Bodern that we need to address, and those are, again, voter registration duties, rulemaking changes, HAVA, and task force. And so I would like the testifiers to keep that in mind with what they are testifying to. And I will, as I have done in the past, if I believe you're off track, we'll stop you. So, and we are going to try to move this bill yet today because it does have to get to finance. It's a next stop. So, Ms. Knuth, please state your name and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sherry Knuth, and I am the Public Policy Coordinator for League of Women Voters Minnesota. Mr. Chair, my testimony mainly concerns veterans, and because that is the purview of the committee, I'm going to bring that. The League of Women Voters Minnesota opposes requiring a photo ID of registered voters at the polls because it is unnecessary, costly, and harmful. Unnecessary because the only thing that a photo ID can prevent is voter impersonation, and there is no evidence of voter impersonation in Minnesota. In fact, the incidence of voter impersonation in all of the United States is demonstrably rare. Costly because both state and local governments, and thus the taxpayers, must incur costs for providing photo IDs. The government would be required to provide free photo IDs for those who do not have one, educate voters and election personnel on the new photo ID requirement and the process of provisional balloting, and implement a provisional balloting system, which is something that Minnesota has never had. And harmful because many elderly, disabled, low-income, and young voters do not have appropriate IDs and would face hurdles, which would be insurmountable in some cases, both in obtaining IDs and in going to an election office to verify their provisional ballots. A photo ID requirement would disenfranchise the very people who currently must work hardest of all to vote. Among those people are homeless veterans. I noticed that the testimony that was handed out, I believe, I prepared today, and I did not have the A42 amendment when I prepared it. And I see that some of the language in the A42 amendment does affect my testimony, because under the A42 amendment, a voter residing in a residential facility, which includes a homeless shelter, and who has a driver's license or ID, would be able to vote with certification from the facility's administrator. I hope I'm reading that correctly. My testimony was written when that option did not exist, but I think still many homeless veterans would face problems because, first of all, they may not have a driver's license or ID, which the new language says is required, and because it wouldn't apply at all to homeless veterans who are not in shelters and would not have an administrator who could certify that they were a resident there. According to a study by Wilder Research, the number of homeless veterans in Minnesota has reached an all-time high. On the night of October 22, 2009, 605 men and 64 women in Minnesota who had served in a branch of the armed forces of the United States were without shelter. That is 1 in 10 homeless adults. 26 of those 669 homeless veterans had served in a combat zone. How would a photo ID requirement affect a homeless veteran or other disadvantaged individual who did not have a driver's license or ID card and who wanted to vote? Under SF 509, that citizen would have to obtain a photo ID from one of 139 driver's license locations in the state. The citizen must go to one of those offices, and to do so would have to overcome any problems they might have with obtaining transportation or paying for it. In some cases, that would be an insurmountable burden for a homeless veteran. Once at the driver's license office, a citizen in search of a free ID must show proof of citizenship. A copy of a birth certificate, which would establish both citizenship and age, costs $26 in Minnesota. If a citizen's full name is different than the name on the birth certificate, a situation which is more likely to affect women, the citizen must also provide legal proof of the name change, such as a marriage license or divorce decree. A copy of a marriage license in Minnesota costs $9. Moreover, citizens would have to obtain birth certificates or marriages, in some cases, from other states. In many cases, that would be an insurmountable obstacle for Minnesota's most vulnerable citizens, including homeless veterans. Citizens may also have difficulty obtaining a birth certificate. In Indiana, after the photo ID law was implemented there, election officials noted that some citizens faced a catch-22. They needed a birth certificate to obtain a photo ID, but they needed a photo ID to obtain a birth certificate. In most cases, that would be an insurmountable burden for our most vulnerable. Because of the lead time needed, any citizen who needs a photo ID card may not be able to obtain one in time for an election. And unless the citizen could obtain one during the 7 days following an election and take that ID to a local elections office, his or her provisional ballot and vote would not count. Based on the challenges faced by homeless veterans, it is highly likely that voting provisionally would not safeguard their votes. I note in my testimony I said it would safeguard their votes. No, would not. That is what I meant to say. Finally, SF 509 provides that a voter ID card holder who changes their address must apply for a duplicate voter identification card. This, too, places additional burdens, some of which will be insurmountable, on homeless veterans and other disadvantaged citizens who want to vote. In Minnesota, we have a very proud tradition of fair, open, and clean elections. Photo IDs are not required to protect the integrity of our elections because voter impersonation does not exist in our state. Moreover, SF 509 creates unnecessary obstacles for honest citizens, including some veterans, to vote. League of Women Voters Minnesota urges you to vote against SF 509. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Knuth. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering, Ms. Knuth raises a couple of questions I'd like to have a response to. Do you want to wait till after?
I would like to, because we have, I think, 10 more testifiers that we're going to try to get.
If there's an opportunity to ask the author a couple of questions.
Yes. Thank you, Ms. Knuth.
Thank you.
Is there somebody here from the Republican Liberty Caucus?
Yes.
Mr. O'Connor?
Yes.
Please come forward and state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Greg O'Connor, and I'm, for the record, I've been a small business owner for the last 42 years, and more recently the Director of Legislative Affairs for the Republican Liberty Caucus. When we're talking about voting, I think it's important to remember that the right to vote and casting and counting our vote represents the only voice that citizens really have, the ultimate power, if you will, to select those who will make the decisions that will directly impact the direction of our government and the role it will play in our lives and our businesses. What we seek to do here, or what we are seeking through this legislation, is to take additional, reasonable, common sense steps to make our voting system as foolproof as possible, assuring that each citizen's vote counts and is only cast by a citizen. It seems to me that protecting the integrity of the system is one of the highest responsibilities of government. The suggestion that there might be some comparatively small additional cost, in my estimation, is a non-starter as an argument. And in conclusion, maybe a couple of reflections from our founding fathers. James Madison, in his 51st Federalist paper, talked about, quote, if men were angels, end quote. But maybe more to the point, Thomas Jefferson told us, quote, in questions of power, which government is, let no more be heard of confidence in man, but bind him down from mischief by the chains of the Constitution, end quote. If you substitute this bill for the word Constitution, I think you have it. I urge unanimous support in favor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Connor. Ms. Nelson from the ACLU, Minnesota. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Teresa Nelson, and I'm legal counsel for the ACLU of Minnesota, funded and supported by over 8,500 members in the state. Our mission is to defend constitutional rights under the United States and Minnesota constitutions. At the outset, I just want to say, with a common name like Teresa Nelson, you have no idea how many Teresa Nelsons there are in the state. This certainly is a worry to me that I might get linked with somebody who's got a felon record. Probably more likely my husband, Tom Nelson, which is also an incredibly common name here in Minnesota. As Minnesota State Senators, you took an oath to uphold the constitutions of the United States and Minnesota. Therefore, every time you vote, you are voting that the legislation before you is constitutional. Senate File 509 is not constitutional. Voting is a fundamental constitutional right. The right to vote is protected by more constitutional amendments, the 1st, 14th, 15th, 19th, 24th, and 26th, than any other right we enjoy as Americans. A fundamental constitutional right cannot be taken away by a vote of the majority. Preventing voter fraud is certainly a compelling government interest. However, what is a minor requirement for a majority of people is a severe burden for a minority of people. Let me repeat that. What is a minor requirement for a majority of citizens is a severe burden for a minority of citizens who may be poor, elderly, disabled, or homeless. If a voter ID bill were to become law, the fundamental right to vote would be defended in the courts. Lawsuits, win or lose, are expensive. This is not a settled issue in Minnesota. While the Supreme Court did uphold the voter ID law in Indiana, Minnesota is not Indiana. First, the microscopic scrutiny of two election recounts in 2008 and 2010 have not led to a single conviction for voter impersonation, which is the only type of voter ID or voter fraud that voter ID could possibly address. Indiana had a history of voter fraud. Second, Indiana does not have any federally recognized Indian tribes, whereas Minnesota has 11. Voter ID requirements particularly affect Indian voters. Most importantly, there's a federal consent decree that protects Indian voters in Minnesota who register to vote with a tribal ID which contains a picture but not address. On its face, Senate File 509 violates this consent decree. Third, Senate File 509 would require a Social Security number in order to obtain a voter ID, with no exemption for people who have a religious objection to participation in Social Security and who have been granted an exemption by Congress. Finally, the bills currently before your committee also must pass muster under the Minnesota Constitution. And just to give you an example, the state of Missouri, the Missouri Supreme Court held that their voter ID law violated their state constitution. Our constitution contains protections that are greater than the Minnesota or than provided by the U.S. Constitution. An oath is sufficient to ensure voter eligibility under the Minnesota Constitution. We do not require a photo ID for the exercise of any other fundamental right, like the right to religious worship, testifying before a legislative committee, or publishing a blog. And under the Minnesota Constitution, laws that substantially burden religious practices or religious beliefs must be the least restrictive means of serving a compelling interest. Voter ID is costly, harms a fundamental right, and there is no measure of its need or effectiveness. We urge you to protect the fundamental right to vote and defeat voter ID. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson. Next testifier is Nancy Bernard. Senator Thompson.
I apologize, Mr. Chair. You want to wait till the end for questions?
I would like to, so we make sure that the testifiers
I forgot. I apologize.
Thank you. Thanks, Barb. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi. My name is Nancy Bernard. I have allergies, so excuse me. I'm here because I'm an angry voter, because there are people voting that shouldn't be voting, and I know for a fact they're voting, and they all text and emailed each other and told us all about it. They were foreigners and made fun of it and thought it was great. That's baloney. Then my vote doesn't count, a law-abiding citizen. My vote's just thrown out the window, and I think voter ID is great. I mean, I don't know what else to say about it except I just recently, by the way, got my birth certificate. I did not need any kind of ID, picture ID. I was born in Bremerton, Washington. I sent the money, gave them the information they wanted, and within 2 weeks, I had my birth certificate. You do not need a picture ID for your birth certificate. So that part isn't true. Let's see what else I have to say here. The other thing is I am considered a senior, and I wish people would quit saying it's so hard on us to get a picture ID. It's not true. Every day I have to pull my driver's license out to show for my bank, for my money, go to the post office, pick up a package. I have to show ID. The seniors really aren't as feeble as people make us out to be. We're pretty law-abiding and excuse me. So that's all I wanted to say, plus my daughter-in-law is a doctor in the Army at Madigan Army Hospital, so I hope you pass the other thing with the license plates.
Thank you, Ms. Bernard. Is it Rhea Nyquist or Ray Nyquist?
Yes, it's Rhea Nyquist.
Rhea Nyquist. Please state your name and proceed.
Okay. Thank you for having me. My name is Rhea Nyquist, and I have served as an election judge for about 20 years in 39A West St. Paul. Just how many of you have ever served as election judges? Okay. Okay, great. Okay. But, you know, we are among the people that really know what's going on, right? Okay. Up until 2010, I would say we had a pretty good system. But I could see potential flaws in it, particularly on the same day voter registrations. One thing I'd like to address right now is how accurate our ballot scanning system machines are. After the Florida debacle, some among you thought it might be a good idea to audit our systems. It just happened that my precinct was drawn in the lottery, and a group of us judges and city workers went to Hastings to hand count our previous elections ballots under surveillance. It was quite a long process, and yet we only counted two offices on the front of the ballot and one on the back. I'm pleased to say that our machines were right on the button. In fact, they registered as voted, even those people who had put check marks in the circle rather than filling out the circle as instructed. Wow, was I ever pleased. Then along came 2010. Our small precinct was overwhelmed with many people I had never seen before. Now, an election judge does know their precinct. Ours has about 1,200 registered voters. You see those folks when you're out walking in the neighborhood. You see them at the grocery store. But obviously, some people just came out of the woodwork for this election. We had long lines before our same-day registration table and before the pre-registered roster table. You know how Minnesota appeared after the election. We looked like chumps. I was razzed routinely by all of my out-of-state friends about this fair process we had. How much more simple it would have been to have had people present their picture ID before the roster table, and some do, and for that we're wonderfully grateful. It would have been so much more easy to have found their names on the roster without saying, "Would you spell that, please?" or "What is your address?" A glance at the picture and the person would be such a good thing to do. The new machines would scan it even faster and so at a more accurate pace, and then they would spit out the voter ID, which could then be signed, and then you could get a ballot. It all makes such wonderful sense to me. When I first heard about it, I thought, yes, this is what we need. I just want to comment that on the last election, one roster judge said to me after a voter had voted and left, "Well, would you look at this? That guy had black hair, and yet his date of birth would have made him nearly 100 years old." Now, was this a keying error on the part of some person at the county office? We hoped it was. Or was somebody voting in place of a dead or an ill person? These are some of the issues that are this great little scanner would have solved. Then I would like to speak a little bit about the same-day registration table. I personally take issue with the same-day registrations. I think most people can figure out an election is coming. I mean, with all the ads on television, with all the signs on neighbors' yards, and you could take matters into your own hand and pre-register. But if they can't do that, how effective are they going to be at choosing what the issues are and knowing about what the candidates are all about? So if they are that last minute-y, I mean, well, anyway. Most states do not allow same-day registration. However, Minnesota is an inclusive state. Our rules are that you must provide some ID, a utility bill, etc. Do you know how easy it would be to fabricate a utility bill on a scanner or a copier? I think even I could do that, and I'm not very good at that. The potential for fraud is definitely there, and I'm sorry to say that I noticed our precinct, when I got on the computer, had one of those registration cards returned as undeliverable. Having said that, how much more secure our people would be at this table to know that the person they register would receive a provisional ballot, one that could be verified at the county level. I just think that's so important. It all makes such good sense. Machines count better than people. A picture is worth a thousand words. To me, this bill is just Minnesota nice coupled with Minnesota integrity. And I think most election judges, Democrat or Republican, would say, yeah, sure, you betcha to this proposal.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I know you don't want questions, but can I just take, rather than have the witness come back again, can I just make a comment? Would that be okay, or would you prefer I wait?
Well, I've already set the tone
okay,
to
wait. I'll wait.
Thank you. Mr. Simon? Is it Ms. Byhofer?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Janet Byhofer. I would like to address the postcard issue. 2008, number four, let me walk you through the process. If you register to vote on election day or you are vouched for, those names are collected, but those ballots go in the machine and they are counted, period. End of discussion.
Ms. Byhofer, I hate to stop you because the postcard issue is not part of our jurisdiction, and I understand.
That's fine, sir.
And we have more testifiers that are telling us they're testifying to the four issues
This is a registration issue, Mr. Chairman. If you get postcards back with bad addresses and you have bad names that you cannot check, you cannot prove fraud or somebody isn't eligible to vote if they disappear.
Right.
So it is a registration issue. That's the whole reason. I mean, if you get anywhere from 17 to 38,000, and this is a random sample, people. This is not just everybody who registers on election day. The question is, how do you prove fraud if you can't find the person who doesn't exist at a bad address? And if I can make that point, I think that's enough, and I will do that. But if it disappears, then it means nothing. And that is the core issue here. It's a registration issue. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, Ms. Byhofer. Ms. Smith?
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Rachel Smith. I'm the Hennepin County Elections Manager, and I'm also here representing the County Association. Basically, just to make four points here. One is that we are concerned about the local government impact on the bill, from the bill. I did respond. Hennepin County did submit some figures on the local impact note, so I can answer any questions regarding if you do have anything related to that. Also, we do have concerns about the HAVA money being diverted from the SVRS system. In particular, the SVRS system is very beneficial to counties and cities throughout the state because it does provide a very efficient and accurate way of speaking simultaneously throughout Election Day and also prior to that. So we do have concerns about that. And overall, we're here to remain and here to answer questions or technical related questions to the bill. We're here to work with the authors of the bill and really, you know, here as a resource. And that's pretty much it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Mr. Dean?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please state your name.
My name is Mike Dean. I'm the Executive Director of Common Cause Minnesota. We're a nonpartisan government watchdog group. I'm here to testify actually in opposition to the voter ID mandate, but I don't want to really rehash all arguments that we've heard and been hearing. I've been at all five hearings so far, and unfortunately we hear the same thing over and over again. And I don't think you're ever going to see any sort of consensus on this bill, to be totally honest. One side is going to say voter fraud is a huge problem that needs to be addressed. The other side is going to say no. One side will say that this bill will lead to massive disenfranchisement of voters. The other side will say no. So let's really go beyond this and have a real sort of discussion about what is the impact of this bill, and is this really the right way for us to move forward when addressing the election issues? So let's assume first that there actually is voter fraud in Minnesota, and that's a problem. So in the proposal, I think the question really is this proposal really the best way to address then that problem of fraud? So in order to do that, we'd have to make a few assumptions. First, we'd have to assume that individuals are really going from place to place, impersonating other voters that are already registered and voting multiple times. We'd have to assume that the checks currently on the system are failing completely, with the election officials are not doing their jobs. They're just letting people sort of walk through. Then as part of that, that person that's impersonating individuals is casting votes for individuals that have not already voted or that do not plan on voting sort of later in the day. Because if that were to happen, if I were to go in and say, you know, I'm Mike Dean, and on the roster they have Mike Dean already voting, that's a red flag for an election official. And this is a huge point because in Minnesota, we're a state where we have a large percentage of people that are voting. 60-70% of individuals in the state register. So for an individual to go through the system without being caught at all, there's a 60-70% chance that they're going to be caught if they're doing this. And that increases as they go throughout the day and vote multiple times if this is occurring. So I think it's really important to think about this from that perspective. But let's really ask the question then, is photo ID really the best way to prevent that fraud? And I would argue that it's no, because really there's loopholes in this bill that's being proposed. The first and most obvious is around absentee balloting. That absentee balloting could still allow fraud to happen as part of it, because an individual that's using an absentee ballot does not have to show any sort of photo ID as part of it. Also, with any sort of ID, you can produce fake IDs. Go to any college campus in the state and you'll see fake IDs. So if a person is really interested in committing voter fraud and they're that motivated, they're going to go through the trouble of creating those sort of fake IDs. And then the last part is, and this has been brought up already, is that no, because of voter fraud or a voter ID cannot stop felons from voting at all. But I think we have to also ask the question is, you know, are IDs really the best way to identify people? Are there maybe more cost-effective ways that we could do this and actually prevent individuals from voting that should not be voting? I think there's a few options there. The first is a fingerprint. Fingerprint technology has evolved dramatically over the years, where it actually be significantly cheaper and actually much more secure for us just to scan people's fingerprints than to go through a whole photo ID system. And so I think you need to think about some other alternatives. The great part about that option is that everyone has a fingerprint. With photo ID, we've heard from previous testifiers that about 11% of individuals don't have a photo ID. So with this, you could scan that very easily. Or the other option is what the Bush administration did in Iraq and require individuals to create an ink dye and dye their fingers. That's going to prevent voter impersonation, and it's significantly cheaper. And then that's the last point I really want to make is concerns about the cost of this. Common Cause did a study looking at the fiscal impact of this and actually discovered that you're significantly underestimating the true cost of voter ID mandates. And I think you really need to sit back and sort of reexamine that. I think there's two areas where you're currently underestimating the cost. The first is around voter education. Right now, there's only an estimate of about $1 to $2 million for voter education. If you look at what other states have done, Missouri is a good example. They estimated that it would cost $17 million to do an adequate job of doing public education. And what they did is increase the amount of doing direct mail, but then more importantly did person-to-person outreach for senior communities. They found that as part of this that many seniors actually did not have ID and that they had a mobile registration team that went to different nursing homes throughout their state to actually register those individuals. I think that's something that needs to be incorporated into this. And then the second is the cost of the free IDs. Right now, the estimate, I think, is around $1 million over 4 years to provide free IDs. I think this significantly underestimates that cost. I would estimate that would be around $4 million. And this is based off of what Indiana has done. So the state of Indiana, which this bill is modeled after, has actually spent around, $10 million to provide free IDs. And they provided IDs to 771,000 individuals. And so that's a cost that could be assumed that would definitely be part of this. And you're unfortunately not estimating that. And so it's really important to note that every state that has implemented a voter ID, the courts have often come back and required the state to then make these type of changes, which increase the cost of it. So in these tight fiscal times, I think you really need to consider that so that voters and the public know the true cost of this ID. And then the last part is about the HAVA funds. I have significant concerns about removing the redistricting money. We're going through the redistricting process, and redistricting has a huge impact on the elections in that if you're not allowing the records to be updated, My concern is people are not going to be notified of voting changes. So when the redistricting happens, often local election officials have to change precinct locations where people actually vote. As part of that process, everyone gets, if that happens to them, they get notified of that precinct location change. If you remove this money, my worry is that process is not going to happen. People are not going to have the up-to-date information about where they need to vote. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dean. Senator Limmer, I'd like to have you come forward now. And members, if you have final comments or questions for Senator Limmer, we will proceed. Senator Cohen?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cole wanted to talk to me about something, so I missed your admonition. I have some questions about the bill because I haven't heard about it. I mean, is that fair game for Senator Limmer, or what?
Senator Cohen, if you have questions about the voter registration duties, rulemaking change, HAVA, or the task force, those are the four issues before this committee that we're addressing. And I understand some folks have gotten away, the testifiers, off that, but we as a committee, those are the four areas that we're charged with.
And Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson.
Point at 3 o'clock, there's another committee starts that I chair, and five members on this committee serve on it. What would you suggest?
Well, my intent is we will be voting on this here, and I want to give
at least register in to give a quorum and let the vice chair start. Would you have any objection to that?
I'm sure there's going to be some questions if you would like to do that, but we will be taking.
No, I just meant if we might exit the committee to log in at that committee so it can start. Just forewarn you. Thank you.
Senator Cohen, you had.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't want to. Mr. Chairman, if you've indicated we should stay within the direct jurisdiction, I know the testimony's gone beyond that, and some of the debate between committee members and Senator Limmer has gone beyond that. It's raised some questions in my mind, so I'm not sure.
And I understand that, and I think, you know, I've been very lenient with that, but this bill has been through numerous committees already. It will go to finance after this, and I'm concerned that we focus on the four areas of our jurisdiction so that we make sure that we vetted that properly. Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I am taking you very seriously on that. So I am going to go back to the question about the Help America Vote Act, and I would like to ask Senator Limmer. We put the state of Minnesota actually put a report to request this funding from the federal government, correct? Because that's how we got this money.
Senator Limmer?
Ms. Chair, I would imagine so.
I need to ask Ms. Frazier to come
I haven't back. Recently reviewed the reason why we requested it.
Well, you know, we have differences of opinion as to how do we request money from the federal government, whether we should have it or not, or use it or not. But I think that a lot of people testify about the value of these and how important it is, and I really want to say thank you to the people who volunteer as judges, because I think we need more judges and we need people involved. The issue here is not the integrity of this bill and what, you know, what you're trying to do, but how we're trying to do this, because we're not paying for it. The state of Minnesota is not paying for it. We are saying that we really think that this is important, but we're not paying for it. So, Ms. Frazier, I would like to ask you about the state of Minnesota sent a report to the feds requesting this money. That's how we got this money, correct?
Ms. Frazier.
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres Ray, in order to receive the Help America Vote Act funds, the state had to put together a state plan that described how the funds would be spent, and that was developed by the former secretary in 2003.
And so these, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this provision that we are adopting today clearly is something that, you know, 2003, this was not part of the plan. Is there a concern in your office that we're using funding that we applied for several years ago and now we are directing you to use it in a different way? Is there a conflict? Have you Have you asked? I don't think we can use this money. I think technically this is wrong. And I don't hear this enough. So the whole issue around this being right or wrong and whether we agree or disagree or people voting or not voting, are we using funding that we are not supposed to, because this comes from someplace else and we are moving legislation here to use it for something else?
Ms. Frazier?
Mr. Chair and Senator Torres Wright, the primary uses for the Help America Vote Act funds are dedicated to voting technology, optical scanners, and accessible voting technology. And so the vast majority of the funds were used for that purpose. The other main purpose of the Help America Vote Act funds were to create the statewide voter registration system. And so to the extent that funds are being spent on the statewide voter registration system, there's latitude to spend them. Another aspect of the Help America Vote Act plan is voter education and outreach. So to the extent it's doing voter education and outreach, there's latitude to spend the funds there. I would need to look at the other expenses in the fiscal note and whether they could or could not be covered. It is possible to amend the state plan. It is a lengthy process. It requires pulling together a committee to look at a proposal, publication in the state register as well as publication in the federal register. And it takes a minimum of several months. And depending upon the Election Assistance Commission and how soon they submit it to the Federal Register depends upon how long it takes. Originally, I think it took them 9 months to submit our plan for publication.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Torres-Ray, we heard testimony from the Secretary of State's office that the existing funds could be used for electronic poll books, voter outreach, implementing the statewide registration system, polling place improvements, and voter education. I want you to know that if we use it for this particular purpose, we're satisfying the improving of electronic poll books, voter outreach, data collection, voter education, and it's also being addressed to technology. It's the very same articles of focus that were given to the Secretary of State, and we're just asking to be used in those same categories for this purpose. There is no violation. We believe that it's a proper use of HAVA funds.
Mr. Chairman, just a final follow-up.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you. Senator Limmer, I feel like I need to say this just to conclude, just to remind you, only 55% of eligible voters actually voted last year. That's compared to 77% of people who voted in 2008. I believe that was because we had a very inspiring person who was running for the presidency, and I'm very glad that he got elected. But one of the problems that we have is that we don't have a system in place in this country that actually encourages people to vote. We do not have that. Your proposal does not include that. This is a proposal of exclusion. This funding today is being used to train people, to help counties increase voter turnout, a lot of great things that strengthen this amazing democracy that I am so proud now to be part of. I became a citizen 15 years ago, and I think this is the most wonderful system. I believe that we need to strengthen this system. I believe that you are saying that you are doing that. I wish you would pay for it, because you're taking money from an account that actually puts a lot of strength into the system. 77% of people came out to vote in 2008 because we had inspiring people running for office. Going down to 55% is just not a good thing. So I just wanted to say this, because there are a lot of the issues around, you know, people who should not be voting and all of that, those are legitimate things. But I think what is most concerning about this current democracy is that almost half of the people who are eligible to vote are not voting, and that's problematic for a democracy. So I wish that we would pay for these ideas. That's all. I wish that we wouldn't take money from other accounts that actually encourage people to get out to vote and actually impose this on local counties and cities to do this. And we're saying, well, you pay for it. Well, That's not going to increase voter turnout. I believe that this is a problem, and you know, if you think that we have a problem that we have to correct, and many people came to say with you that indeed we do, we need to pay for it, and we are not paying for it. That's the problem. We say that this is a problem, that this is our priority, but we are not paying for it. We're taking money from other accounts that do great work to pay for this, and that is a problem for the state of Minnesota, and I just wanted to clarify that, that this is a problem for all of us, and let's see how we vote on it.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a bit of a voice problem here, but Senator Limmer, I think you do mean well by this bill, and I do have an objection to using the money the way that you're using it here. And for people that don't know this, we have, and I might not be able to say it, but we have several safeguards in our law already and in our system in Minnesota, many more safeguards than most states have. And I'm just going to quickly go through those safeguards: voter registration, registration oath, verification of newly registered voters, statewide voter database, postal verification, Minnesota Department of Corrections data, election day oath, transparency on election day, post-election review of voters, transparency after election day, and investigations by county attorneys. This covers just about every possible eventuality we could have with people falsely voting. Your bill doesn't prevent anybody from falsifying just another document if they really want to. If they really want to fraudulently vote, they can still fraudulently vote. They can still get a birth certificate. Even our election judge said she got a birth certificate and didn't need much of anything to get that. It isn't going to make it. No matter what kind of a system you put together, there's going to be ways to get around it. And what you're doing here, I've got probably 10 senior facilities in my district, a lot of people that can't get out and can't get out to get their pictures taken or get out to get a voter ID. And we're eliminating those people. What we're also doing here is we're eliminating those students that may have changed out of their dorm into an apartment a few weeks or a week or so before election. We're saying you can't come in on election day and have somebody verify that your address, or you wouldn't have a utility bill or anything anyway, so you can't have somebody come in and verify you. We're restricting it no matter how you look at it. We are restricting voting. And if somebody moves close to the election, they have to get another card. It's just ongoing. If somebody, we have a 30% turnover rate in one of our schools because we have low-income housing there, and people have to move constantly to keep trying to find housing they can afford. Those people would have to constantly keep getting new voter identification cards. That it's an imposition. It's making it more difficult when I think we already have plenty of ways of verifying our voting. And North Dakota, by the way, folks, doesn't even have voter registration. They don't even have voter registration at all. We have voter registration, and we have all these other safeguards. So I think we're very well protected in the state.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I thought I heard you say that this bill is going next to finance, but I had a question for Senator Limmer because this came up in the last committee, and that's this matter of the inclusion of the of the application requiring the Social Security number Senator Lori brought up as a matter for discussion, how we deal with that Judiciary Committee, and I thought you were amenable to that. Mm-hmm. We know that federal law prohibits the requirement of a Social Security number if not including that were to bar or inhibit anyone from exercising their rights and freedoms. So is your intention to take this to Judiciary Committee, Senator Limmer?
Senator Limmer?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, we did have that discussion in the Transportation Committee. This discussion blends, at that point, it was two versions, driver licenses. To get a driver's license, you have to give a Social Security number that's held by DPS as private data. Mm-hmm. I believe, with the Secretary of State for voting purposes. Social Security or a part of the Social Security number is collected for them for their reference purposes, and I believe that too is considered private data. And so we're just recognizing the provisions of law when we marry these two systems together, and that that private privacy considerations remain the same. So I brought those concerns to Senate Counsel, and they said that we met the privacy concerns that were recognized by Senator Lurie.
Well, Mr. Chair, if we're not going to deal with that issue in judiciary, I mean, here's what the U.S. Code says. It shall be unlawful for any federal, state, or local government agency to deny any individual any right, benefit, or privilege provided by law because of such individual's refusal to disclose his Social Security account number.
Mr. Chair.
I think Senator Limmer answered it. He went to counsel, and they said that's been addressed.
Well, better yet, Mr. Chair, we have someone from Secretary of State that could talk about how they use Social Security numbers and how they get around that federal requirement.
Ms. Frazier?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, the Help America Vote Act requires that on voter registration applications, applicants are required to provide either a driver's license or state identification number, or if they don't have one, the last four digits of their Social Security number. And so the federal law in that case requires some applicants to provide the last four digits. There's no authorization for voters to be required to provide the full Social Security number. And my reading of the application for voter identification cards is that this data would actually be given to the Department of Public Safety, not to our office. So this is completely unrelated to the requirements of the Help America Vote Act.
Okay. Senator Daley. Thompson.
That's all right. Believe me, I've been called worse. Good burn. That was a nice thing. I move the Senate File 509 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chair, I request that we do a roll call vote and that the vote be recorded in the Senate Journal.
So noted.
Mr. Chair.
Three hands for roll call. Okay. Senator Dibble.
I'll defer to Senator Cohen. I think he is knitting his eyebrows at me. I think it might be on
Senator
that question.
Cohen.
No, Mr. Chairman, I want to follow up to Senator Dibble's question. This is something I've not been aware of. So unless you're going to follow up, Senator Dibble, I'd like to.
Well, I'd like to amend the motion to send it to judiciary is my intention, Mr. Chair.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, if that's what Senator Dibble is going to do, I haven't heard a response to this concern of the Social Security the usage of the Social Security numbers, and maybe that's been addressed at a different committee, but if this is the first time that's been heard, the explanation I've heard up to this point is not satisfactory, certainly. Well, Senator Limmer, I don't know if there's some further information we have on that, or?
Mr. Chair, I have no further information on that.
Okay. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a number of questions, and I won't go into them now. I'll abide by the admonition of the chair and maybe wait for a committee of more general jurisdiction like the Finance Committee to address some of those. I just want to make one kind of aside because I'm not sure how many of the witnesses will be present at any subsequent hearings, but just a particular, because I've heard this over and over again, so I have a lot of respect for the folks who serve as election judges. To sit there all day into the night is quite a job and can be very difficult, particularly where you have a high turnout election like 2008. But in response to the witness who has served as an election judge commenting that the people who utilize election day registration are the ones who are least informed, I probably have been on the ballot, at least for the legislature, more than anybody else around the table. And my experience over the years, over many elections, has been that the folks who register for election day on election day tend to be the folks, at least who approach me, who tend to be the most engaged and the most knowledgeable, who are really looking for the opportunity to vote and are not just doing it on a rote basis. And I've had that experience over and over again over the years, that When I have questions about Election Day registration, when somebody asks me that I'm not registered, can I register on Election Day, they're the ones who by and large, are more engaged than the others. So just a comment.
All right. Senator Thompson renews his motion and moves that.
I move to amend that motion to refer the bill to the Judiciary Committee. I request a roll call vote on that amended motion.
And I'm going to ask Mr. Bonner, is that a proper motion?
Mr. Chairman, it is proper to amend the motion in that manner.
All right. On Senator Dibble's amendment to the motion, Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I assume, Senator Dibble, you're making that motion because of the Social Security issue.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
That is correct. I mean, the reading on page 6, starting on line 3, the application for voter identification card is very clear. Moving down to line 6, application must include state the applicant's full name, date of birth, sex, residence, address, and Social Security number, which is in direct variance and contrast to the provisions of the United States Codes and the Privacy Act. Shall be unlawful for any federal, state, or local government agency to deny any individual any right, benefit, or privilege provided by law because of such individual's refusal to disclose his Social Security account number. That needs to be dealt with in Judiciary Committee, Mr. Chair. And we didn't deal with it in transportation. We just acknowledged that that was an issue.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, if I could bring you to page 9 of the bill. We do have use of Social Security number referenced in Section 14. That reference states an applicant's Social Security number may not be displayed, encrypted, or encoded on the driver's license, Minnesota ID card, voter ID card, or included in a magnetic strip or barcode used to store data on the license, Minnesota ID card, or voter identification card. Social Security number must not be used as a Minnesota driver's license, identification, or voter identification number.
Mr. Chair.
So.
Yeah. That deals
Senator
with
Dibble?
That deals with the disclosure of the Social Security number, and that's fine. This is about requiring requiring the Social Security number, and it's and the variance of that requirement with exactly what federal law dictates. So, I mean, I think that discrepancy needs to be explored and reconciled in the Judiciary Committee.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer hasn't expressed an opinion on the motion, but I'm not quite sure why you wouldn't want to have that issue addressed in the in your committee and have some resolution to that issue, because if we're passing a law that's in direct contravention of a federal statute, that's going to give some federal judge a good excuse to throw out the entirety of the law, and so it would be within his or her proper bounds of doing so if that was the determination. So why not? I'm not sure how this fits in terms of the committee deadlines. And I don't know if the next stop, Mr. Chairman, the Finance Committee?
Yes.
I forget what Senator Thompson's motion was, but I assume that's the last stop before the floor. I know we have the holiday break next week, but you're the chairman of that committee. I would think you'd want to have that issue resolved and not have some bill show up in a federal court as a consequence.
Senator Limmer, did I not hear you say that question was based on what we had in transportation, of which I was there, and I remember Senator Laurie bringing that up. Did I not just hear you say not long ago that you had taken that to council on this bill, and council said?
That's correct, Mr. Chair, but I think the discussion is worthy of contemplation. I think, Senator Cohen, I was never asked an opinion of whether or not I should make an opinion on that, and I'm more than happy to bring it to the Judiciary Committee. I have no problem.
Okay. Do you want to do that from this committee first, or do you want to do it from finance? I mean,
I would suggest we go to judiciary first.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Thompson.
I understand. Does Senator Dibble have the amendment pending right now? If he were to withdraw that, with Senator Limmer's permission, I would withdraw my previous motion, and I would entertain ask the committee to entertain a different motion in accordance with the will of the body here.
Senator Dibble?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will withdraw my amendment to the motion.
Senator Dibble withdraws his amendment to the motion. Senator Thompson?
Mr. Chairman, I would withdraw my motion that Senate File 509 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Finance Committee. And I would instead move that Senate File 509 be recommended to pass out of this committee and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary.
Mr. Chair? Just a minute. Senator Thompson moves that Senate File 509 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary Public Safety.
Mr. Chair?
I assume that's as amended.
As amended, yes, correct.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair.
Okay, I'm going to take the fingers that I saw come up first. Senator Goodwin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to say, Senator Limmer, you might want to look at in judiciary, which I'm on to, Section 24, too, because that's an unlawful voting penalty. So that's a judiciary issue, I would think, as well.
All right, Senator Limmer.
Senator Goodwin, you'll have every opportunity to bring up that and any other question you may wish.
Senator Lilly.
I believe that my request for the roll call was stripped by that last change, so I'd like to reinstate that request for a roll call and ask that it be recorded in the Senate Journal.
Three hands. All right. Secretary, take the roll.
Chairman Perry.
Aye.
Senator Carlson.
Yes.
Senator Cohen.
No.
Senator Daley.
Yes.
Senator Dibble.
No.
Senator Gazelka.
Yes.
Senator Goodwin.
No.
Senator Lilly.
Yes.
Senator Olson.
Yes.
Senator Ortman.
Yes.
Senator Thompson.
Yes.
Senator Torres-Ray.
No.
Senator Wieger.
No.
With five yeas